Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Well, I am so excited to have back my good friend Courtney Howard, who is a wonderful critic. She writes for Fresh Fiction and Variety and is also a very talented freelancer who writes for other places as well. Courtney, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back. Like, it's always fun to talk to you.
Of course, the door is always open. And this time I was kind of pushy because I was like, Courtney, you're sort of synonymous with Paddington 2. So we have to talk about Paddington. Yes. So thank you for going with me on this Paddington journey. I think this year everybody just kind of needed a few more breaks than usual with everything going on in the news and life getting more and more complicated. You know, we were just talking off air about like car troubles and things piling up and tech issues and, you know, all the things that we deal with on a daily basis. September's always kind of busy as well. So this was a really fun time to be able to look back at some of these great movies. I had not seen the third Paddington, so this was a good opportunity.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm curious to hear what your take is on it.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember, were the Paddington books important to you as a kid, or do you remember?
A little bit. Beatrix Potter was more like
interesting
for me. If we're talking about, you know, exports overseas, like the Beatrix Potter books were huge. But I did read Paddington. But of course, I don't think it was as huge here as it is in the UK, of course, because of its history and like what it means and what it's a metaphor for and all that stuff. But I was, you know, I love Paddington. I think he's an adorable little bear. I remember I had a stuffed animal in Paddington with like the little coat and the rain boots and the hat and everything like that. But yeah, I was more of a Beatrix Potter kind of girly. So when this, like when the first movie like came across my way, I was like, oh, that seems cute. Like, let's go check that out. Like, hey, it's got all these like big people in it. Let's go see Nicole Kidman's in it. This should be fun. I've heard it's fun. And like, it was really cute. Like, I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
One of us who were screening it in that screening room, were pleasantly surprised. And, you know, hearing colleagues laugh is always a funny thing too. From 5 minutes on, it's like it goes and you're like, okay, I get this tone.
Yeah. It's just the quality of it is so good. I think we kind of get used to seeing, especially the family movies and the kids movies that they throw at us, like every two jokes are something toilet related or something. And this is just like quality. And like you were saying too about what it's a metaphor for and what it stands for. It's really, there's something beautiful about it, coming from this, veteran, who was writing right after World War II about his experiences and the idea of these displaced children and making it about displaced Paddington and, what that is like. And yes, it's so beautiful. I love the cast. I think I was heartbroken, although I love Emily Mortimer too. But to lose Sally Hawkins, because there's nothing like, you know, you see the scene where he's at Paddington Station, which is how he gets his name, this bear from Peru. And, you know, she adopts him and you just think, go with Sally Hawkins, you're safe. Yes.
And her voice has just such this like beautifully tender timbre to it. Like if you watch like, you know, Bring Her Back, like right after, you'll be like, these are two separate women. Like, these are two different things.
Yes.
But she has this, like, she can tap into this beautiful, like, vulnerable nature. And when she sees him in the station and the lost and found sign, like, is like illuminates behind him, like the found part, it's like it touches
so
me
beautiful.
Every time. And she has such a, like, a tender spirit. And yeah, it was really sad. And even in the second one, she has, like, at the very end when she's saying like, go answer the door, like the way she says that line is just perfection. And I know like Emily Mortimer has that sort of tone to her voice too, but it's just, it's such a different Sort of like she's just a different custodian of the character.
Yes. Yeah, she's warm. She's kooky, which is something I always loved about Sally. She's very brave and very comfortable in her own skin. Like, I think Happy-Go-Lucky was, I'm sure we had seen her in other stuff before that, but Happy-Go-Lucky was the first thing that really sparked, of course, with her, and that's what the movie is supposed to do. And then since then, yeah, it just, she radiates so much warmth. And I also love Hugh Bonneville. This was around the time, you've got the Downton Abbey series going on, and now we have the third film of Downton Abbey happening. So,
I'm
yeah.
very curious, like when a little digression, but like I was sitting in a green room and Walton Goggins' publicist was in there with me, and she was saying that you can always tell what fan is going to come up to him and say, "Oh, I loved you in this." And so I'm very curious with Hugh, if Bonneville, like, if he knows, like, what people, like, obviously a child isn't going to come up to him and be like, "I loved you in Downton Abbey." But, like, a grown person, like, for me, like, what does he think, like, I'm going to say? Like, I would say Paddington, hands down, even though I love Downton Abbey. Like, I'm very curious if more people approach him for Downton Abbey or Paddington.
Yes, yeah, they kind of narrow it down, and they also sort of have a little list to try to make the encounter go a little bit faster, because otherwise it's you're in that thing, and it's like I'm in 130 things. So yes, so it's like looking at them, how old are they? Is it the right, yeah, are they the sitcom person or the movie person? Yes, so that is really funny, and you do wonder because. Yeah, I mean, it could be I Love You in Paddington and Downton Abbey. I
I
mean,
mean, let's
maybe,
not limit
yes.
this.
You know what I was thinking when I watched the first one, the Muppet movie? Well, actually, the original, of course, I think inspired, this was from the director of like the Mighty Boosh, all of the episodes of that series. But so he clearly likes sophisticated, cheeky humor, but he knows how to do warmth and stuff from, and I think the influence of Muppets cannot be understated. And also, I think we just had that newer version of the Muppets with Amy Adams and Jason Segel, which was very adorable. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what his like. His in, like he talked about his influences like during like Paddington for Paddington 2, like Frank Capra movies and stuff like that. So like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, like that sort of thing. And then he wanted to like for the sequel really ramp up the Chaplin aspect of it all. So like modern times, that kind of thing. But there's also like little influences in there too in the sequel of like The Untouchables and like It's a Wonderful Life. The end of that is very It's a Wonderful Life, and like not a one for one, but almost those same sort of story beats, and that always like makes me just fucking weep.
I know. Yeah, it's a good blend of the bitter and the sweet there at the end, and also just like you were saying too, you can see the Capra-esque quality of it. And but yes, it's very Capra-esque, and you can kind of see that tone in the movie and the Keaton and the Chaplin-esque ending on the train. I keep telling everybody about this movie and I go, you have to see the train sequence. You have to see the train sequence, like to sell them on it. If they're not really, they're like, Paddington, really? I think now most people are willing to roll with it because of, the Pedro Pascal film.
The unbearable weight of talent, or
Of
Nick
talent,
Cage.
ego, whatever that was. It's the title's a mile long. Nicolas Cage, Pedro Pascal. Like, what's your favorite movie? Paddington 2. I love that.
But yeah, like but yeah, the first one's good, and it's so funny because like when I heard about the second one, people were like, "Oh, you have to see it. Like, it's even better than the first one." And I was like, "But the first one was like really, really good." And they're like, "Trust us." And so I saw it and I was like, "Oh my God." Like, he really went like above and beyond, like for the sequel, and like really nailed it. Like, the first one is good, but the second one is just like a masterpiece. Like, It makes you be a better person. It makes you feel good. It makes you cry. Like you laugh, you cry. Like all of those tones are in there. And it feels like first one feels very much about like inclusion and, you know, immigrants coming into this country and refugees coming in you know, finding friends and like caring for each other and kindness is a superpower. And that's really
Found
lovely. And they sort
family,
of, and family, and they carry that through to the sequel where it feels like it's very much about enrichment and how like refugees and immigrants come into countries and just enrich the community and make them better places. And I don't know of like a better message than in this current era
I
to have that. It
know.
feels really like revolutionary and rebellious to have something like that in what's essentially like what people would term a kid's movie or whatever, even though this is very much an all ages
Yeah,
film.
it is. And you can see how this would have, you know, appealed over the years for like adopted kids and yeah, for immigrants. And there's something for everyone in this, but it's those little touches and the way that it hits at the right time. About a Peruvian bear coming over that is just perfect, I think. And one thing I loved in the first and second one were the villains. Nicole Kidman having like the time of her life. She's kind of doing a Glenn Close, Cruella de Vil sort of thing, but not quite as campy, but, she's having some fun. And, then of course, Hugh Grant. I love Hugh Grant, like playing a scumbag. I mean, you know, we all fell in love with him as the stuttering, mop top
Rom-com
guy.
guy.
Yes, you know, but there's something about this cranky era of him over the last like 10 or 15 years that I just love.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like it's funner to see him play like the darker sides of these characters and the more like irascible kind of guys. Like it's really fun to see him delve into that rather than play the foppish. Like, okay, you know, he's great in like music and lyrics is one of my favorites too. Like where he does a little bit of both and like sort of wrestles with a little bit of a darker side, but is still a rom-com kind of lead, but he's given complexities. But yeah, we've done the whole Four Weddings and a Funeral thing, like
Notting Hill, yeah, we're done with
9 months,
that.
like we're past all this. So like now it's time for him to grow. And it's great that he's gotten those projects too that allow him to grow and like have the same sense of humor. He seems to share the same sense of humor as Paul King, because even as an Oompa Loompa and Willy Wonka, you would never think he would be a part of something like that. And he just like knocks it out of the park. It's like the traditional Oompa Loompa.
I know, and he's so good in the new Guy Ritchie's. It's just fun to see him like this. And I think you made a really good point. Like it was, maybe it was around the time of About a Boy and Bridget Jones' Diary where we started to see some complexity in these characters. Definitely Bridget Jones, 'cause you get very angry at him. And then it's like, let's push the envelope even more, but also just show these other sides and colors of Hugh Grant.
Love About a Boy too. It's like it's
Oh my
another
God, I
one.
adore it.
It's so good. But yeah, I mean, this could be a whole hour. Like we could digress
Oh, I
completely
know,
and just
right?
talk
It'd be
about
like
Hugh.
Toni Collette has that Sally Hawkins, Emily Mortimer thing. Like, you know,
She
yeah, it
does.
could just go down the
She really
same. Yeah,
does.
exactly. And I do love all of these great British actors that are in it. Like, you know, Julie Walter, you have Jim Broadbent. You have such a, it, were there any favorites you had as you were watching? Peter
Everyone's
Capaldi, I thought was great. Yeah, in the
great.
first.
Yeah, I love the line in the second one. I had to like go back just to like get it right, because it also feels very much of this moment. I think about it a lot in terms of like ICE raids and all that stuff and all the like people who are dressing up just in camouflage just to go just be just assholes, you know?
Yeah, go
And I
harass
think about
people.
the scene where he comes to the colonel, one of the neighbors in the community's door, and is like has the he's self-appointed himself the commander of community defense force. And the colonel is like, oh, is that what you're calling it? Or are you just wearing a yellow vest? So I think about that like a lot with the whole ICE raids, and it's like, Are you really an actual like
Yeah. Or you
person?
just
Are
like
you just,
cosplaying being a
yes,
jerk?
exactly. So like I think
Yes.
about that a lot too. So if I could pull that from Paddington.
Yeah, like the podcast warriors, like
Yes.
deciding that they're gonna go out and
Exactly.
join up. Yeah. And
Exactly.
I think one of my favorite surprises in the second one was Brendan Gleeson, who I
Yes.
adore.
I
I had a
love
great
Gleason.
experience with Brendan Gleeson. He came for the Cold Mountain screenings when they were here, and he came a day early
Oh.
and came to the theater. He didn't really have anything else to do, and so they weren't really prepared. We didn't know we were getting a Q&A, and the press people were like, "Jen, just ask a bunch of questions." So I got him talking about like his background being a school teacher in Ireland and
Oh.
eventually getting into theater, and he's just such a warm and like, you know, there's a twinkle in his eye and calls everyone darling, you know, and he's great. And so it was really fun to see him as this, prisoner who's
Tough
tough and scary, but then gets really into the marmalade. Yeah. Yes.
He's the victim of Paddington's hard stare, and
The hard stare. I had
the
forgotten
rest is
about
great.
that being
Yeah.
like part of the books and part of totally had forgotten it. This morning I remembered like they made these videos that I think I got through my mom worked at a library when I was a kid, so she would bring home all the kids' videos. So I did vaguely remember that there were Paddington little shorts made in England in the early 80s, and I found one this morning on YouTube from 1982, Paddington Goes to the Movies. It's not great. It is not, but there's a sequence where he does, you know, Singing in the Rain, and there's
Oh.
also the hard stare. And I was just like, I love that this was always in there. Yes. Yeah.
It's fun to see what they incorporate from like the books and from other things and what they pull from and then other influences and sort of marry all those things together. I think it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
I love the first and the second one a lot, and so I
Me
was
too.
really kind of highly critical of the third.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as enthused about the third as I am the first
No, me
two.
neither.
It seems to know it's got huge shoes to fill, and I think it carries through, of course, some of those themes of like legacy and like where you're from and your family and that whole aspect, and then changing, like having to change things. I think kids go through those sort of things
Yeah.
too,
And
where
finding your own destiny, things aren't always written in stone.
finding
Yeah.
your own tribe and like all that stuff. So I think it speaks to them on that level. That's really well done. They do some incorporations of like there's Fitzcarraldo,
Yeah.
references. There's like, the Werner Herzog of it all for the adults.
Yes.
Like they don't go quite as hardcore. Like it does feel like it's missing a little bit of that Paul King touch to
Yeah,
it,
I agree.
but it's still a lovely film, and I think Olivia Colman and Antonio Banderas really understood their assignments. Like
Oh
they
my gosh, Banderas is so
oh
great.
so
Yeah.
great, and it feels like he is truly like his character is wrestling with his familial demons of like
Yeah.
wanting and needing that gold, that curse, to like get him and his daughter out of it, and sort of wrestling with that versus Olivia Colman's character and what she sort of how she factors into the whole thing of it all. But they're both so funny and so charming, and so like that sort of brings it back up a little bit for me too. But
Yeah.
I was hoping for a more like perfect trilogy, but it's still really cute and charming and endearing.
Yeah, it's a
My
step
husband, I think,
down.
liked it more, I think, than I did. But
Okay.
having a third Paddington in the world, there's no bad Paddington.
No, and I guess they're starting to think about a fourth film, so that will be interesting. But yeah, I agree. I think it still has a convoluted mystery plot with villains that are over the top and stuff, but it paid too much attention to plot. And I think
Yes.
that was, you know, before it's like, yeah, it was kind of a convoluted plot, but you just got lost in the world and the settings and the settings in these movies and the fact that there are visual effects, of course, but you know, the backdrops, these are real places and it's very, everything feels very textural and three-dimensional and like this is a real kitchen, you know. And I did notice by the third movie with the spider and some of it, the visual effects were getting a little too CG or obviously CG. Yeah, so it takes it down a notch or two for sure, but you know, of course you want to spend more time with these characters. Yes.
Yeah, and like it's so, every time I see Paddington, I always feel like it's my dog's face.
Yes.
It feels like they get like
He
frames
does
shorter.
have that sort of
Yeah.
dog face.
He has
Yes.
that little like the eyes and everything, and just a little tender voice too is real sweet. And like, it's funny, I had forgotten that going
Colin
through the
Firth,
notes that it
right?
was going to be Colin Firth
Yeah.
instead of Ben Whishaw. And it was like a mutual like
Yeah, he
party
was the wrong
too.
voice.
Yeah,
Yes.
and like he knew he was the wrong voice, and Paul King knew it was like just not working. And so they
Yeah.
both mutually like split. And that feels like such a adult creative difference,
Yes.
decision to have.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it was very much a mutual, like they're not overselling that. So like it's great that they
No.
found Ben Whishaw, and like Framestore did an amazing job on making that hair look. I mean, he looks so, Paddington looks so real. And all the effects in the first two, I love, like the whole, like all the mixed media stuff of it all, like
Yes.
the painterly, the
Oh my gosh, it's
sketches.
so bright and vivid. Like, because
Yeah.
also, I had forgotten that the mom, played by Sally Hawkins, is an artist. And so that is reflected throughout the entire house. You know, you
Yeah.
have the primary colors, of course, but the secondary, there's so much color in life. Yeah.
Yeah, and the mural on there, like on the
Yes, the
stairwell wall,
staircase.
that changes and sort of
Yeah.
flourishes. And it also changes in the third one, too, a little bit, too. Like they add to it more Peruvian, like accents and jungle accents, like later on. But yeah, all of them have this like beautiful, like mixed media sort of feel to them. So they're all really delightful and like really a pleasure to watch. Like it's not. You kind of think like going in, like it is going to be like every other jangling keys sort of kids
Yeah.
movie where it's like just to entertain the children. And then you get there and it's like, I'm laughing too. Like this is like adult humor.
Yes, absolutely. And you said you did two of the press junkets for these movies. So what did you learn? Was there anything interesting that you remember?
Yeah, I went through the notes, like some little tidbits. The first one, Nicole Kidman was talking about how she brought her kids on her, at the time, two daughters on set. One was 6, one was 4. And they both were really concerned about her playing the villain because they were
Oh, I
like,
bet.
oh, we don't want you to hurt the bear. But then once they saw what was going on, like she said, the 6-year-old was obsessed with her haircut, the
Okay.
blonde.
Yeah.
Which, yes, fully. I get that.
Yeah.
Like
It's very like
anybody.
Louise Brooks, right?
Yeah, very
Yeah.
much like a sharp, harsh
Yes.
bob there and the bangs and everything. And then she was really enjoying seeing her mom play the villain. And so Nicole's like, I don't know if I should be concerned about that. So that was really cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like just stuff like that. I think like in the second one, the thing I'd also forgotten about was Simon Farnaby, who is in the movie. It was in all has been in all three of them in little cameo roles. Like he was the security guard at the sort of explorers thing at the Explorers Museum in the first one. He was sort of the security guard at the church in the second one, and he has a short little thing in the third one as a flight attendant, just very, very short. But he was saying in the at the sequels press conference that at the very end with Hugh Grant singing the Sondheim song, it wasn't always going to be a song. It was going to
Oh.
be a play. It was going to be the end of Hamlet, and all the prisoners were going to be performing, and it was going to be just dreadful. And then it became a musical when more of a musical actor sort of signed on, and then they had the song. So I thought that was really interesting. I completely forgot about that.
Wow,
So
that is interesting. I
I can't
read.
imagine it being anything else but that, because it's so perfect. And Hugh
It
Grant like
really
knocks it
fits
out of the
well.
park.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that he has a cameo in the next one too, Hugh Grant. Yes. Well, one thing I read is that Michael Bond, the author, he has a cameo in the first, he's like a kind gentleman. But in he actually passed away at the age of 91, and the day he passed away was the day they finished filming Paddington 2, which is kind of an amazing sort of like, almost a blessing, or there seems to be something spiritual about that. That was really beautiful. And in accordance of with his wishes, he's buried at the Paddington Old Cemetery, and the epitaph on his gravestone reads, "Please look after this bear. Thank you." And that's like tugged at my heartstrings. Yes.
Real sweet. I know he got to, because I asked them about Michael Bond's involvement with the sequel, and he had only seen one scene to completion, but I cannot remember which scene it was. So I'll have to get back to you. I'll have to like email it to you after, find my notes again. But he did see one scene to completion, but he was very much open to collaborating on like what they were doing. He never told them like, no, don't do that, or like anything like that. He was very much open to seeing what they were doing with the character and really loving it. So he's very much agreeable to their creative collaboration.
That's wonderful. Do you have any idea why it changed creative teams from two to three?
I think if I remember correctly, Paul King was sort of like, I sort of need to get out of this world a little bit. And he was sort of busy with Willy Wonka stuff.
Yes. Oh, that would have been such a big job to undertake. Yes.
So he was sort of busy with the Willy Wonka stuff. And so he figured like he wrote, I think he co-wrote the story or something, or it's like story by, but obviously like not direction,
Story
but
by, yes.
yeah, I think it's story by Paul and Simon, on the third one,
Yeah,
but,
Paul Simon and Mark Burton. Yep.
yes, yeah. So I think he wanted to get out of that world a little bit. I don't know if they do a fourth one. I don't know if like he would come back. Like, it would be really lovely if he came back, but I also don't want to creatively stifle him, because he's so great. He's such a great film director, and he's so smart about it all.
That's wonderful. And you can just tell how much like care and attention went into every frame of that movie, because like you were pointing out, when he gets adopted essentially at the station, you see the sign light up and you're maybe not going to notice all these things. I mean, you definitely won't the first time you watch, but you see this movie, especially if you have kids, you watch it a few times and you're going to pick up little new things here and there every time,
Yeah,
I think.
exactly.
Yeah, and you can just tell like how much work went into this movie, but it never feels like work. It just feels like they wandered onto a real street and this is where it was. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I agree with you, the end of two is so beautiful. Like it just makes you want to sob. Yes.
Like, because you think he's missed her birthday, and he's
I
like, it's so
know.
important. The popping book was so important to him, and he really wanted Aunt Lucy to see London. And then it was such a, like, again, it's a Wonderful Life. Like, when you realize, like, getting choked up all over again about it, but it's like when you realize, like, you are a part of this community.
Yes.
I'm crying again.
Yeah, I know.
All his neighbors are all there.
I think it handles coming of age really well, because sometimes they hit you over the head with that in family movies or kids movies. But Paddington wants to buy his Aunt Lucy this extravagant book, and so he tries to get a job. So he's being like very responsible about it and not just like, I want money. And so I think it's like gentle, like, well, I'm a bear, I'll go to work. And I just think that's really kind of cool too. I was thinking of other movies that were made around this time that were for kids and families that I liked. Ramona, the Beezus and Ramona. Did you
Oh, I
see
didn't
that
see it.
one? That was very well done. I was trying to think of other ones. Kit Kittredge. I think some of these were like shown to a critic and then opened on one theater and then disappeared. and they were good. Are there any that you remember coming around the early 2010s or late aughts?
Not with like on par with Paddington,
That's
really.
what I was trying to think. Yeah, quality wise. Yeah, it's
Are
hard.
You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, for
That
Girls.
was excellent. Yes.
Really a great coming of age film, but I wouldn't necessarily relate it to Paddington.
No, kind of like when your kids get older and they move on from Paddington, maybe go to that one. Yes. Yeah. No, it's hard. I think this was such a special thing that they did and put together. And my hope is, with Paddington in Peru, and maybe if there's a fourth one, maybe it'll get kids excited about hearing these stories again. I saw the status statistic about parents are no longer enjoying reading books to kids anymore as much. And I work in a bookstore during the day and I sell a million books to, so for me, I'm like, well, I don't know who those parents are. There's so many, buying for their kids. But yeah, so it does make me wonder if that's part of a bygone era a little bit too, if
Yeah, it's hard
now
to
stories are
tell.
on tablets. Yeah.
Yeah, they're on tablets, but like, my friend writes young adult novels, granted a little older than Paddington, but like, but she's had her author like sort of wrap party or whatever you want to call it at this one bookstore in Montrose that's a little indie bookstore, Once Upon a Time, I think it is.
Okay.
And they sell tons of stuff, like even like anything from adult to very to baby sort of books, little stuffed animals, stuff like that. But when we were last in there, like a week or two ago, they had a constant stream of customers coming in and buying stuff.
Yeah.
So, and like just walking out with like just stacks of like books. So it's nice to see that not everybody's just buying from like Amazon or not buying at all or
Yeah,
so.
exactly. Yeah, when I was shelving the other day, I saw that they just released a Clifford Treasury of like three or five in one, a
Oh, that's
hardcover
cute.
treasury. And also, I was ordering like Frog and Toad, and this is making me think I gotta order some more Paddington for the store now. Maybe find that bear that we both had, the stuffed animal. Yeah.
I have my Peter Rabbit still, but I did not, we didn't, I don't think my mom saved my Paddington. I think she did a whole purge of things and like gave them to like neighborhood kids and stuff, which
Yeah.
sure, that's how Paddington should go to somebody.
Absolutely.
But I did
Yeah.
keep, I do have my Peter Rabbit, and that was another sort of movie that
Yeah.
was out at the same time as the Paddingtons. Like the first one was after, I think, the first Paddington, and then the sequel was like around the same time or a little bit after. It was like pandemic-y.
Okay. I didn't see it. What did you think of
The
it?
second Peter Rabbit. So I hated the first one.
Okay.
I thought it was obnoxious, loud,
Ugh.
Annoying. I really hated it,
Not what
especially
that
as
should be at all. No.
a Beatrix Potter person. I was
Yeah.
like, kids are going to learn the wrong things from this.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't the character that the very specific kind of character that Beatrix Potter had written, where he is a
Yes.
bad rabbit, but he learns and he grows and he's mischievous, but he's not horrible. Like the Peter Rabbit that they constructed was a horrible human, like a horrible human rabbit, like kind of
Like
thing.
an asshole rabbit.
Real asshole. Like he
No.
was literally trying to poison Brendan Gleeson's son.
Oh,
So like,
wow. Oh, it's all coming
there you go,
together. Look at
Domino.
us. Yeah.
Like, so he's literally trying to poison him, and it's like, what are we doing here? Like with anaphylactic shock and stuff.
Oh,
And
my
it was like,
God.
what is happening here? So that was awful, but the sequel was much better because it didn't involve murder and like
Yeah,
killing
exactly.
people. It was a little more fun and more in the spirit of Beatrix Potter. So the sequel was a little better, but it
Okay.
definitely did not like, and they both of those did really well at the box office, like better than Paddington. And it was really hurtful to me personally that those
Yeah.
two did better than Paddington. And I was like, what's wrong with you people?
I know. Well, they say the first reading you do and the books you love as a little kid, they become part of you. And so
They
it's
do.
like family. Like, don't mess with Peter Rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's
Courtney will show up and she'll bring her Peter Rabbit with her.
I will, but also like
Give him a
Christopher
hard stare.
Paddington. So
Yeah. Give him that hard stare like Paddington.
that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, Peter Rabbit, the first Peter Rabbit movie should have he needed a hard stare from Paddington
Okay.
like to like behave. Then he would have behaved.
Yes. Well, this, I think we're telling you, if you guys have not given these movies a chance, to check them out for sure. Yesterday I was on a date with a guy who was like, Paddington? And then he remembered, that Pedro Pascal comment. And he said, after he said that, he's like, I went home and Googled it. And he's like, no, he wasn't kidding. That is supposed to be a really good movie. So I'll watch it. So
Yeah.
you know what?
Yeah.
We're getting them one at a time, Courtney. Yes.
This is how it spreads. Like we literally, Fred and I literally like convinced an Academy voter to watch Paddington 2 because we're
Did
like,
you? Nice.
Hugh Grant, watch Paddington 2. We're not kidding. And they're like, really? And we're like, yes. Like if we could sit you down right now and not watch Mary Poppins Returns and you watch Paddington 2 instead, then we would do that. But go home, watch Paddington 2. And she's like, but there's no like awards thing. We're like, we don't give a shit. Like just watch it.
You need it in your soul. And you know what,
Yeah.
though? I think Hugh Grant did get nominated for the British Academy
BAFTA,
Award.
yeah. BAFTA was the smart one and like took it home and like
They're
out.
not that snobby about it, whereas,
Yeah, whereas like the Academy, like just
No. Yeah.
no love.
Nope. But if he was lip singing some song, he's gonna get the award. No, just kidding. We're not going there. But yes. Anyway, no, this was so much fun, Courtney. And
Yeah,
next
thanks.
time you're coming up with a topic, because I kind of like steamrolled you, like, we're doing Paddington. Yes.
It's fine. I'll talk about Paddington. Like, I will, excuse me, sir. Do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior Paddington Bear?
Go door to door.
Door to door, I will proselytize for Paddington Bear. And people will be like, this strange lady showed up.
She gave me a stare and
She gave me a
marmalade
stare.
sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as a dollar per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.